Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good evening, Melbourne, and welcome to the Kiss My Art show on Joy 94.9. You're with Amy and Kylan. Kick back, relax, shake off that Monday-itis, because tonight on Joy 94.9, the Kiss My Art show, we have a jam-packed show, don't we, Kylan?
We do indeed. Thank you, Amy. And thank you, lovely Kat and Farina over in Distopical. Look at them.
Oh, aren't they cute?
You probably don't want to know this, but Kat was doing her makeup at the end of the show. Just because she wants to look good.
She doesn't need to.
In her words, you always have to look good on radio.
Very important.
Into the hour, what we've got coming up. Guys, we have a very special treat tonight. We have Nicholas Bird, the director of Ballroom Rules, a documentary that is playing at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival. We're going to spend the first half an hour talking to him. Nicholas, would you like to say hello?
Hello.
I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to it.
So, yeah, we've got that coming up. What are you talking about today?
Today, I'm reviewing two latest release albums that were released during the week. First up is, let me get my head around Chitty, it, The Shins and Chitty Bang,
exciting stuff.
What about yourself?
I will be reviewing The Rum Diary, Hunter S. Thompson's first novel, now a film, and 21 Jump Street. So, guys, stay tuned for that.
All right, Kiss My Art.
Oh,
the Friendly Fires
right there with the song Show Me Lights. My personal pick for this week, because I absolutely love Friendly Fires and I saw them at Future Music and loved the out of them. It was awesome. Very much so. You are listening to Kiss My Arts on Joy 94.9. I'm Kylan. That's Amy over there. Right now, guys and girls, we have Nicholas Bird in the studio, director of Ballroom Rules. It's the Australian documentary featuring this Saturday, 24th of March at 2 p.m. at Acme as part of the Melbourne Queer Film Festival. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. This is fantastic.
Right now, Nick's just been commenting on how well the studio and the station set up.
Yeah, well, I haven't been here before, because last time I went to Joy was in the old days in South Melbourne, and yeah, it was pretty good, but wow, not as flash as this.
Oh, well, welcome along, man. We are obviously going to be talking about your film, Ballroom Rules. The first thing that I would like to know is, tell me the motivation behind Ballroom Rules. What made you want to tell this story?
Okay, well, it's pretty simple. Eleanor Sharp, who co-directed and co-produced the film with me and is also one of the characters. For those aspiring filmmakers out there, never do that. So she did this same-sex dancing and kept winning medals and everything. And I said to her, you know what, I have to come along. And I went to the midsummer competition in the Collingwood Hall, and it was about 40 degrees and... And I had a look at it and I thought, wow, this is amazing. It's a film dying to happen, you know. And Eleanor said, look, we're training for the Gay Games. And I said, well, what's the Gay Games? And I said, Eleanor, let's make a film about this. And she's like, no, we're not going to do it. This is my personal life. Go and jump sort of thing. And then the next day we went out for breakfast and she said, you know what, we really should go for some development money to film Victoria. And we went for some development money. We got $5,000. The king of factual at Film Victoria was discussing it with the ABC over lunch. And we'd worked for the ABC before. And I get a phone call and it's like, hurry up with your teaser. The ABC wanted.
Wow.
And
wow.
That was it was like, oh, wow. But the only problem was we were going to make 3 30-minute episodes and the ABC only wanted one.
Ah. Yeah. Alrighty.
And the nightmare began.
And speaking about that nightmare, just for those who are listening, The Ballroom Rules is basically, it's a documentary about same-sex competition dancing, in which the documentary follows four couples and their preparation for the gay games at Cologne in Germany for 2010. The dancers are very good. They take it so seriously. I think that's one of the misconceptions that is involved. And I think some of that comes maybe from our community as well. But I would like to ask you that when we come back from our little break that we're going to have. Welcome back to Joy. And you're listening to Kiss My Arts on 94.9. I was going to do the whole thing, 94.9 FM. Jesus. Oh, very tired after a very busy weekend. Amy, anything you'd like to say?
I'd like to say a massive thank you to Nicholas Bird, the director of Ballroom Rules, for joining us in the Joy Studio tonight to talk about the documentary that is on everyone's lips. And obviously, it's at the moment, it is.
Yeah.
And as you've heard in the first quarter of this show, you know, the interesting production and everything that's gone into creating this film, that we've had text messages come in already about the things we're speaking about.
Yeah. So getting back into the film there, my friend, I was just asking before you went away last, did you find that there were any misconceptions about competition dancing with our own community, within the gay community?
I've always felt that Dance Cats and Annie, For whatever reason, hasn't had the support that she's deserved. She hasn't had the publicity that I think, all the support, and I think, you know, and there's the whole sad story of how that's all ended up. Mm. You know, and at the end of the day, I think we have to support each other, you know, as much as we physically can. And you guys as a media outlet are in a powerful position. I think the community... We just need to support each other as much as possible in these struggling enterprises that are going around. And ballroom dancing is hysterical, and we went in wanting to make a fun film, but at the end of the day, it's very much has ended up into a sort of a passive-aggressive statement on rights, and it's almost an activist film, but we do that very gently.
Throughout the documentary, as I said, mentioned earlier, we're introduced to four couples, each with their own reasons and taking part in the documentary. I liked that because it introduced the very humanistic quality to it. Was it easier to find those people to participate in the film? And what was your purpose in doing that?
Okay, well, the film had an enormous problem. Dance Cats is... it was very small, okay? Mm. And the gay games is a big commitment, so we only had so many couples to go into the gay games. And luckily, all those couples that went to the gay games agreed to be in the film. But I actually think that was under some sort of pressure and reluctance because we wouldn't have a film without that.
Yeah.
And the film got commissioned and it was like, oh, my God, you know, and we didn't have a choice. That was it, you know, and luckily they all agreed, and it was hard work, you know, getting making a film of this quality. There's a lot on the cutting room and a lot of personal stuff that they had to share, and a lot of Sundays and sad days where they let us into their house and you know, and it was very, very painful for them as well. And I think they were all doing it for the love of dance, to say, okay, this is a statement about Dance Cats, and, you know, we're same-sex dancers, look at us.
Yeah.
And this is a chance of same-sex people to say, you know, this is how we live, this is who we are. And, you know, they were just champions. It was just a privilege. And there were many times, especially in Cologne, where there were tears and a few times, you know, go away, Nick, like and a few like abrupt words said to us, because we were constantly pushing and saying, you know, being a filmmaker is selfish, you know, we want the best film, we want the best story, you know, and we will do anything to do that. And if you're not prepared to do that, if you're not prepared to be yelled at and going beyond the boundaries of what you're meant to do, well, don't be a doco filmmaker, go and, you know, make corporate videos. That's what I say. You know?
Segue into the Cologne Games. When the, I don't want to call them actors because they're not actors, but when the dancers, when it draws closer, because you start off 12 months before everyone's going to Cologne, then it gets, you know, 9 months, then 6 months, and a couple. when it was a month away and you guys were getting ready to leave, how what was everyone like then?
Okay, they were feral, basically. Yep. at this stage, we'd made a lot of mistakes. We'd probably overfilmed. We'd probably overworked the people, our participants, and they were frankly sick of us. You know, and we look back, and Eleanor and I look back and go, oh, shit, you know, we shouldn't have filmed that or we shouldn't have insisted on that. And, you know, and they were just exhausted.
But how would you know, though?
It's difficult. This is the problem with an observational documentary. And we had so many characters and, you know, at no time, even though it was commissioned as a 30-minute film, we were making a 30-minute film.
When people go to see this film, once again, it's playing at ACME as part of the Melbourne Queer Film Festival this Saturday, which is the 24th at 2 o'clock. What is it that you want the audience to take away from this film?
Okay, this is a very different film to what we wanted to make. Sure. I just want to say that. And so originally we didn't make it for queer audiences. So that's a
interesting.
It's a difficult, you know, because what will queer people get out of this? Because there is a lot of activism. Okay, the women are married. They went to Toronto. Is that interesting to me? I'm a gay woman. Probably not, you know. But what is interesting, I hope, for a queer audience is the dancing and the story of the dancers going out and winning at Cologne or losing or making fools of themselves, which some of them say they are, but they're not, believe me, they're absolute champions. And for people to be acknowledged in a dream situation of being in Cologne in a queer environment and just having fun, people will laugh. And people will cry. And if you don't laugh or don't cry, well, I'm sorry, because I haven't done my job then.
Yeah, you just have a heart of stone, basically, if you can't respond.
Prick.
Just a couple of questions, because I've got you for another 5 minutes. Are you a dancer yourself, young man?
No, I'm not, although I did promise Annie that I would take up lessons. But now Dance Cats has been sold and, you know, it's all gone. Sort of Annie has basically just been burnt out and exhausted.
Poor girl.
Yeah, but, you know, she had a really good run with Dance Cats, and I think... and she came up to me after she saw the film, you know, said, I really love this and, you know, and I respect it and I respect the process and everything. And she just said, look, she's just really glad she did that. And we sort of took a snapshot of her studio at that time, because the characters are incredible and they're nice people.
They are. They all have their own personalities. They all have their own reasons. And just what's involved with them along with the dancing, but they use the dancing to kind of lift them up from the dregs of life. Not to get real deep on that shit, but that's what I got. Like, Bridget.
Yeah.
The story of Bridget is incredible.
Yeah, Bridget and Caro were amazing. And this is the thing, two intellectual women, masters, PhDs and all the stuff. And I thought, you know, they're going to over-intellectualise everything because they're so smart, you know. And I'm thinking, I'm interviewing these people and they're like analysing me and they're like, oh, my God, you know. I just kept asking the same question over and over and over. And again, it's the selfish filmmaker in me, but in Cologne, Bridget, what was it like to have breast cancer and you're in Cologne? How cool is that? And then the next day and the next day and the next day. And, of course, the poor girl did eventually have, you know, like the whole reflection thing, which you can capture on camera. And I guess I didn't mean to push it that hard, but she sort of said to me at the end, you know, you didn't really, but she really opened up in the end. And I think that's one of my favourite moments at the end of the film, when she sort of just comes to camera and says, you know what, you know, this is, well, I won't say it, but yeah, it's a really nice moment.
If you want to find out what she says, I suggest going along to see the film.
Well, it's the whole idea of being so sick and in near death, and she really was, and she danced throughout that whole experience. Is really just something, you just draw strength on it, you know. And my next documentary is based on Holding the Man, you know, by Tim Conagrave. It's an AIDS memoir, and he on his deathbed wrote a book. You know, and I draw strength on that. And when I get rejected by funding agencies or told by a national broadcaster that the story's too queer, you know, I just go, well, he wrote a book on his deathbed full of AIDS. I can make a film about it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One last question before you go. We've had a text in. What is that? What's that there?
We've had a few texts come in, actually.
Where can a girl go dancing in Melbourne? I think that's one of the brilliant things about your film, your documentary, is that I didn't even know that there was a same-sex dancing studio here, and unfortunately it's not around anymore. But you know, with Annie and Dance Cats, that studio was based here in Melbourne, and
one of the few, the only
dance studio accommodated for gay people, gay and lesbian people. So what about now?
Well, Dance Cats has been taken over by a new couple. Mm-hmm. They're not a gay couple. They're some straight, I think, champion couple that still want to, coach the dancers. Because one thing about Annie, and Annie's a beautiful dancer. She's just lovely to watch. And her partner, who, you know, she believes isn't very good as well, but like the partner says that, but she's not. They actually look beautiful together. I just love watching them dance. I just sort of lost my train of thought then because I'm vague and I'm creative. I'm big picture. It's like, oh, my God.
Well, I'll tell you what, to leave off with, give us one last word about the film. What is it that you think captures this documentary that you've made?
I think what captures it is just the dancing and the love for dance. And the fact is that the Gay Games is such a wonderful event where we as queer people can, you know, get together without the shit. But, I just thought, well, you can't touch us. We're in Cologne and we're surrounded by 20,000 queer people. That's great. Love it.
Thank you, young man, for coming in to talk about your film, your documentary. Once again, guys, it's called Ballroom Rules. Obviously, you've heard how passionate our young director is, Nicholas Bird. Once again, it's showing at Acme as part of the Melbourne Queer Film Festival, Saturday, 24th of March at 2 p.m. I highly suggest going to see it because it is an endearing film. It is very sweet. And as Nick, you've said, there's a lot more to this film than just what you see. Thank you so much once again. Thank you for coming in. You're listening to Kyle and Amy on Kiss My Arts on Joy 94.9. Thank you once again to Nicholas Bird, director of Ballroom Rules, which is playing once again Saturday, 2 o'clock at Acme. Over to you, my love.
Thank you. Just before that, you were listening to the wonderful and the only Chitty Bang.
Chitty Bang!
Chitty Bang! Chitty Bang. Singing Ray Charles, which was actually released last year. Some of you may have already heard that. It's from their latest album, though. It made it on to their latest album. Album Breakfast, which was released on the 9th of March, just a little over a week ago.
My birthday.
Was it really?
Yeah.
You never told us that.
No,
how
I like
did
to keep
that
it a
sneak
bit
through? Yeah. My goodness. Well, happy birthday for
thank you.
You and the Breakfast album share a birthday.
There we go.
We should do a birthday segment on Kiss My Arts. Well, speaking of breakfast, what did you have for breakfast this morning?
Muesli, like I always do.
Oh, it's like you always boring. Do. Yeah. Oh, jeez. I had a bagel.
Okay.
I had a blueberry bagel at that. It's gourmet.
Okay.
Okay. Back to other news. Right. So Chitty Bang have released an album called Breakfast. It was released on the, what did we say it was? 9th.
Yes,
the
9th.
The 9th of March. I'm not normally an avid hip hop or rap listener, but this album is almost everything I could want in an album. A 14-track oral banquet from beginning to end. So many layers with intelligent use of samples and beats, along with frequent use of pianos and brass, which has been appropriately coined hip-hop for indie fans. The indie rap group are from Philadelphia and are comprised of rapper Chitty and his soul beatsmith Zafoon Jones with an X. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
It's their first LP after a slew of critically acclaimed mixtapes and Chitty's 9-hour freestyle rap session.
I know,
have you heard about
that?
The
Guinness
Isn't
World
that
Record.
Awesome. Yeah. The biggest digression from Chitty Bang's earlier work is a lack of well-known samples. In the past, they've fused hip-hop with the likes of Radiohead, Passion Pit, and MGMT to produce party-inducing songs. Despite this, it is still an incredibly clever album. I just love the track Ray Charles. They sampled the legendary blues piano of the man himself and have created an amazing blend of soul, hip-hop, rap, and even a gospel kind of feel. Chidi Bang have a way of combining something insanely catchy with fantastic beats, and this soulful piano riff oozes retro charm. This is one of those songs that jumps out of the record player and into my body, taking over my limbs and making me move in ways I never knew I could.
It does, though.
It does. The track Mind Your Manners is also another fantastic one, which ingeniously samples Swedish pop outfit Icona Pop's song called Manners, which is also incredibly clever and catchy. Vivi Brown's vocal on Happening, the track Happening.
Well, Vivi Brown.
Yeah. It is another slice of soul pop heaven, believe me. And it underlines the... However, it underlines the obvious Chidi formula of hooks so simple that they resemble playground chants and nursery rhymes. The duo sampled MGMT's Kids on their 2010s global hit Opposite of Adults, and they prove without a doubt that not growing up is their obsession. It's a fantastic album, a really, really great debut, 4 out of 5 kisses. Woohoo!
I like it.
Okay, so I'm going to do a not-so-good review now. The Shins have been a very hot topic around radio waves in the last week.
Very big in the indie scene, aren't they?
They are very big in the indie scene, and they've just released their latest album, Port of Morrow, which was released on the 16th of March. This is the first Shins album without keyboard player Marty Crandall or drummer Jesse Sandoval, both of whom were fired by frontman James Mercer after the band's 2007 tour. James Mercer is the only original member left, and to be fair, he has and always will be the essence of the Shins. I've read a lot of reviews this week from diehard Shins fans who were disappointed in this album, saying it just isn't the Shins they know and love. Interestingly, listeners coming to this album afresh do seem to really love it. Many of these reviews say that it's James Mercer's most sophisticated work to date, but personally I find this album is not musically sophisticated at all. Sure, some of his lyrics are poetic and thoughtful, something he's always been talented at, but musically it provides little excitement for me, and at times it's even embarrassingly banal.
heading the Shins, aren't they?
Indeed. None of this album, for me anyway, is surprising. It is calming, relaxing and melodic, but very, very predictable. It misses countless opportunities to really shine musically and instrumentally, leaving gaping holes in textures that could be filled with something unique. Instead, we have countless verses and choruses that can only be likened to eating bland leftovers for breakfast days in a row. I give it 2 out of 5 kisses.
Okay, so not that bad.
It's not that bad, but I don't feel like it has anything really new to contribute. And I know he's kind of going for this nostalgic feel and referencing music of the past, but I feel, you know, that's all good and well. And it works, you know, for example, with the Ray Charles song. I mean, they've done it beautifully, but they've brought something fresh to it and something new. And I think that's what the Shins have failed to do.
Okay.
But, you know, that's what happens.
Well, listeners, after the sponsorships that we are going to be playing, you'll listen to a song that Amy has chosen by The Shins called The Rifle's Spiral.
Indeed. Make sure you stay tuned. You're on Joy 94.9 on the Kiss My Oats.
Yes, The Shins, they're playing on Kiss My Oats with Kyle and Amy on Joy 94.9. Amy, good choice. Nice. That was nice.
That's the best song on their album. Yeah. No, that's the one to listen to. Up next, we've got Kylan's reviews. He's been a busy boy this week, heading to the screenings of a couple of really interesting films this week.
Yeah, Kylan. Interesting. The first one that I'm going to be reviewing is The Rum Diary, which is based on Hunter S. Thompson, you know, the famous writer, Gonzo, started off Gonzo, Fear and Loathing. You know him? Yeah.
Oh, look, we had dinner once or twice.
Oh, you lucky woman, you. Alrighty, so here's the specs for The Rum Diary. And as always, people, excuse the scripted voice. It's 120 minutes, M rating. Director's Bruce Robinson, along with the screenplay. Based on the novel by Hunter S. Thompson, The Rum Diary. And the cast includes the amazing Johnny Depp, Giovanni Ribisi, Aaron Eckhart, Michael Rispoli, and Amber Heard. Yes. First up, Guys, don't expect a revisit to that other famous Thompson film that also starred Johnny Depp. Fair and Loathing in Las Vegas was a drug-induced mind warp that made the most sober of people curious to indulge. But unlike its cult status, The Rum Diary is a much tamer version of the former. Set in stunning 1960s Puerto Rico, Johnny Depp plays Paul Kemp, a sweat-soaked alcoholic who turns up to the island to work as a reporter at the local paper. Now, initially set to write horoscopes, he soon becomes friends with fellow journalist Sala, played by Michael Rispoli, and Kemp becomes interested in the Puerto Rican culture and the imbalance between the people and the expatriates that live there. Enter smooth-talking businessman Sanderson, played by Aaron Eckhart, and his sultry girlfriend Shanae, played by Amber Heard. They befriend Kemp and try to entice him into a new business venture that seeks to disenfranchise the people of the land. Now, the screenplay for this film has at times that very rich Hunter-esque dialogue which jumps out and captures the watcher's attention. It has a great recall back to Fear and Loathing. You know, Hunter S. Thompson was renowned for his liberal use of all things we hate to love, and, you know, he must have had a ball experiencing life at this time with all the political agendas and cultural divides in 1960s Puerto Rico. There are moments of hilarity, of course, and instead of the drugged up episodes we might have encountered in Fear and Loathing, The Rum Diary, it's more like a hangover, you know, taking us all over the show, and unfortunately with no real substance. As a result, the plot just seems to die out in a way with no resolve, and even the terrific Johnny Depp cannot save the mediocrity this film delivers. Besides the cinematography, which is absolutely stunning, with a great saturated 60s tone to it, it is Giovanni Ribisi who brilliantly stands out as the eccentric Moberg. Apart from that, the film fails to be anything remarkable and thus becomes something unforgettable. I give this film 3 out of 5 purely for the acting and cinematography alone.
Sitting on the fence a little bit there.
Yeah, just be aware that don't go in expecting the same from Fear and like The Rum Diary as you did with Fear and Loathing. Totally different films, very different. And the other film that I have to review tonight is The 21 Jump Street. It's 109 minutes, MA rating. The director, Phil Lord and Chris Miller. Distributor is Sony Pictures Releasing. The story was originated from Jonah Hill and Michael Bacall. And the cast includes Jonah Hill, Channing Tatum, Ice Cube, and Brie Larson.
When did I get stabbed? That's awesome! Yeah!
Yes. It's 2005 and Jonah Hill plays Schmidt, the token nerd at high school who was picked on by, you guessed it, the token bully. In this instance, it's Jinko, played by Channing Tatum. Now, come on, we all know the dynamics here as we've seen them many times before in films. But skip forward 7 years and the lads find themselves enrolling into police academy together. Now, keep up, people, because the first 15 minutes of this film moves very fast. Upon graduating at police academy, they become bicycle cops and end up scoring their first bust. Congratulations, right? Wrong. The one thing they forgot to do was read the criminal his rights. As a result, they are demoted to a rehash program in which they must report to an angry sergeant, played by Ice Cube. Where is that program, you might ask? That's right, on 21 Jump Street. Schmidt and Jinko then have to go undercover at a high school to find out who the supplier is of a new drug hitting the playgrounds. Not only do they have to deal with going back to post-adolescence, but they also have to deal with a new high school mentality in which tolerance is hugely respected. Now, Hill came up with the idea for the story and was an executive producer on this film, as was Channing Tatum. There are laughs aplenty and a lot of penis jokes, and of course, your good dose of typical comic humor. But when that seems to be a bit too much, one can always rely on a good car chase scene or two to help move the plot along. Sure, it's just another American tripe film with an unoriginal plot, and it definitely won't garner any major awards, but so what? Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum kick ass either way. I think teenagers are going to get this film. They're going to like it a lot as they will understand it, even though most of them weren't born when 21 Jump Street first came out. The action is okay and the acting, well, Jonah Hill is brilliant. Overall, the film is ridiculous, but it's ridiculously fun. Therefore, I give it 2.5 out of 5. Next week, we have The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, The Hunger Games, and The Raid. Now, Just so you know, I'll be in New Zealand next week, but I will be reviewing The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel and The Hunger Games. So be sure to check out the films. Also, guys, at Melbourne Queer Film Festival, a lot's on offer, and there's also a great vibe down there at Acme. So be sure to head down and check it all out.
What's coming out this week in the music world? We've got the Mars Volta releasing their latest album. We've got Macy Gray, White Hills, and One Direction. So check out some of that this week. In music news, we have a number of international acts letting slip their Australian tour plans during interviews at South by Southwest. One of the first bands to do so was UK four-piece Django Django, who let slip there they will be here in Australia in July for Splendour in the Grass.
Nice.
Another band in contention is The Shins, which we've been speaking about tonight. Drummer Hamish Rosa has left The Vines to join Wolfmother and has reported that the band, quote, has broken up.
Ooh.
Ooh. Portraits of Kimbra and Sydney outfit Boy and Bear are among the finalists in this year's Archibald Prize.
Nice.
This song is by Butterfly Boucher, and I'm actually going to see her gig at the Northcote Social Club this week, so I'll be reviewing her gig on the show next week. So this is a little bit of a preview, perhaps, for next week's show, and it's a really, really great song, and this is it.
Welcome back to Joy 94.9. You're listening to Kiss My Arts with Amy and Kylan. With the last 2 minutes that we have, just a couple of shout-outs. Just want to give a big shout-out to my brother who's getting married in 2 weeks. Woo! In New Zealand. He's getting married to his beautiful fiancée, Kerry. All the best for them. And also a big shout-out to my friend Ben, who came back from Canada and bringing along his Canadian boyfriend, Brenton. Welcome back, boys. We're going to have lots of fun this week before I go.
Just a quick shout out to the Griffin Ensemble, a good friend of mine who runs that. They've got a show coming up at the Gasworks Studio Theatre on Saturday, March 31st at 8 p.m. Head along to the Griffin Ensemble website. Griffin Ensemble, that's G-R-I-F-F-Y-N ensemble.com for more information about that. Next week on Kiss My Arts, when Kylan is frolicking the fields of New Zealand, I will actually be sharing with you an interview that I'm having with the Bombay Bicycle Club. So make sure you tune in next Monday at 9 p.m. on Kiss My Arts, where I'll be here all my lonesome, but Kylan will be here in spirit.
I'll be here. There'll be me. Reviewing, you'll hear my voice, but I just won't
be here.
You'll
hear your voice, but you won't be physically sitting over there with your gorgeous beard.
No, y'all, thank you.
Speaking of beards,
guess who's coming up next? That's right, you got the boys in the cubby house, and Cookie and Kevin have the president from Vic Leather in, talking about his very interesting hobbies that
he keeps. Yeah, it's an amazing show coming up with the boys in the cubby house. Stay tuned for that. You've been listening to Kiss My Arts with Kylan and Amy on Joy 94.9. Melbourne, stay classy.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.